Welcome to another episode of the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we spend the hour discussing proud contested media, critical media literacy, and fighting fake news. Chase Palmieri from Tribeworthy comes back to the program to talk about Tribeworthy.com and how crowd-contested media can help build trust among news users in a increasingly confusing landscape of fake news. In the second part of the program, we are joined by veteran investigative reporter Dave Lindorf of ThisCan'tBeHappening.net, and we'll be discussing his latest article about how Washington has long engaged in information warfare, including fake news and trolling. Stay with us. Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. For the first segment of today's program, we are joined once again by Chase Palmieri of Tribeworthy.com. Chase is a self-described news junkie who serves as CEO and co-founder of Tribeworthy.com, the home of proud contested media. Chase and his team are building trust among online news consumers by holding authors and news outlets accountable with a review system similar to Yelp and Rotten Tomatoes. Project Censored has had Chase Palmieri and the members of Tribeworthy on the program before, and we've also done several public events with Tribeworthy as they do a form of critical media literacy education online, and it's a great interface and user-friendly platform to help build trust among news sources. And in the last year, Tribeworthy has been upping their game. They've been monitoring and updating their sites, and they also have some new offerings. And we are pleased to be rejoined for the first segment by Chase Palmieri. Chase, welcome back to the Project Censored Show.
Thanks, Mickey.
So remind our listeners, in case they don't know, what exactly is Tribeworthy.com? Where did this idea come from?
It's funny you say that because the history originated about three blocks away. We're here speaking in Petaluma, and my father and I started a restaurant, Reezy Beezy, down the street here. And I was managing the Yelp campaign for our restaurant when I got out of business college. And I came home and was running that campaign for my dad. And I was seeing all these reviews coming in, and I was seeing customers, mostly happy reviews, but then you'd see somebody that would leave a review because the calamari came out cold. And during all of this, I was living deep in the online news world, and this was pre-term of fake news, pre-fake news hysteria, but The trends and the direction of which where it was going was still pretty obvious at the time. And so I started to ask myself, how is it that customers can review a restaurant for calamari coming out cold, but news consumers have no way of holding news producers accountable? We can see blatant logical fallacies or biases in these publications, but we have no way of attaching a rating or holding these outlets or authors accountable. And so that was kind of the aha moment and initial sense of injustice that started Tribeworthy.
So you saw a need, and it's interesting, too, that you have a business background, but given that you have that background, you believe quite strongly that there should be accountability, there should be a place for feedback, there should be a way for many people in the community to give feedback to create an optimum experience, right? And taking that from the restaurant world to the news world means that people should be able to collectively work together to give feedback to news agencies about when they're inaccurate or about when they're covering titillating sensational information or junk food news, as we call it at Project Censored, or when information is overly biased or it's propaganda, right? You're saying that maybe the best defense against this kind of assault, or now that the term fake news is a thing, one of the best ways to address that is through what you call crowd-contested media. So can you talk a little bit about that term?
Yeah, crowd-contested media is a term that we ourselves made up. We invented the term because we felt that it best described what we're doing. And what we are doing is we're essentially connecting news consumers and allowing them to share a collective voice and to use that voice to try to raise the standards of online journalism. When you think about the landscape before Tribeworthy, and which is still what most people would call just the landscape because we're still a very young site, you would pretty much go about gathering news alone. And even when you're gathering news on Facebook, on these social platforms like Twitter and Facebook and Reddit, when you click through to a news article, you're ultimately left on your own. There was nobody there to warn you of what the quality of the content is that you just landed on. There's no way of knowing what the history of this source is or the history of this author's leanings are. Essentially, every time you land on a piece of information, you're left to your own devices. And we started to think, well, what would it look like if we tried to allow news consumers to really collaborate properly and in real time as they go about their natural news gathering? And what would that really look like? And that's a big part of what we launched today, actually, which is, and it's going to sound complicated to people, but it's really not, a Chrome browser extension. But really all that means is it's this one little widget that you download onto your Chrome browser, which is what most people use to surf the internet today. And using this little extension that you download, you can now be gathering news in real time with all of your fellow news consumers that are also on the extension. So you would land on an article before Tribeworthy, and if you had an issue with the article, if there was an outright bias, you might just exit out of the article, and you would have done nothing to warn the next reader. But now you would simply review that article right then and there using our review process, and it would tag that flaw, maybe a particular logical fallacy or a gender bias, a certain mistake, and you would tag that flaw to the lifetime URL of that article. And then any other news consumers that came and landed on that article after you would have the benefit of your review.
So, Chase Palmieri, it's also important to point out, as you do, and just wanted to also remind listeners that Chase has an article in the latest Project Censored book. We were quite impressed with the work that Tribeworthy was doing, and Andy Lee Roth and I invited Chase and the Tribeworthy crew to submit a piece for the Censored 2018 book, Press Freedoms in a Post-Truth World, in Chapter 3, Media Democracy in Action. Well, this is a perfect opportunity to showcase an organization like Tribeworthy, because you're literally talking about media democracy. You're talking about giving people the opportunity to weigh in and give feedback that follows the article around online. You mentioned your Chrome extension browser. Is that it? Your browser extension?
Right.
And the website, by the way, again, is tribeworthy.com, so you can go there. But I also wanted to point out that you write that Tribeworthy is not a fact-checking organization. So you're not PolitiFact, you're not Snopes.
Correct.
So let's talk about, I mean, again, those are fine organizations in terms of their general intent. Their general intent is to fact check. Their general intent is to call out falsehoods. We won't spend too much time talking about some of the other internal problems, either at Snopes or at PolitiFact or some of these other sites or some of their own biases, right? One of the real challenges of those sites is it's basically akin to outsourcing the critical thinking process. So tell us, why is Tribeworthy not a fact-checking organization?
First off, we're not a fact-checking organization simply because we never make claims as to the validity of information ourselves. Just like Yelp would never come into your town and say, hey, this Denny's restaurant is the best restaurant in town. They're simply a medium for users, the customer, the end user, to leave a critique of their experience with that particular product or service. And so that's what we do with Tribeworthy, is we're simply the middleman capturing these critiques on these articles and then redisplaying them in a way that it's very practical and useful.
And you wrote about this, of course, in the piece Tribeworthy, Crowd Contested Media and Censor 2018. You also make another couple of observations about the challenges, the realistic challenges that fact-checking sites face.
Essentially, fact-checking organizations were more useful when there were gatekeepers to who could actually publish content. With the internet, those walls came down, and now the three of us sitting in this room could easily produce content ourselves today. And the gatekeepers are gone, which means that there is now a flood of new information that has entered the news and information ecosystem. And fact-checkers simply cannot scale to cover and validate all of these articles because of At the rate they're being produced, it's just simply unfeasible. And a lot of these fact-checking organizations are simply non-profitable organizations that can't even scale the business side of their operations to try to bring in the manpower to do so. So the only way that we see the future of testing and checking the validity of online information is to give this power into the hands of the news consumers themselves. Because if not, you either are relying on fact-checking organizations, which can only fact-check maybe 5 articles a day, which isn't very useful to anyone, or you're relying on algorithms that are simply designed to display information or try to weed out certain information. That's not really the safest thing for a democracy, especially when the power is being controlled by some of these giant media conglomerates that tend to stick to the mainstream narrative.
We're talking with Chase Palmieri, co-founder of TribeWorthy.com, Tribeworthy crowd contested media. You can learn more at TribeWorthy.com, and you can read an essay that Chase wrote in the new Censored 2018 book. So, Chase Palmieri, what do you see as a potential threshold before you can really make claims that people are getting something out of this?
That's a fantastic question, and that's one of the most asked questions, is how many reviews do you need on an article before it actually becomes useful? The short answer is, right now when you land on an article, you have 0 reviews and ratings, so even one well-written, thoughtful critique of a news article that you now have access to that you didn't have before is helpful. And again, you don't have to take it for its word, just like with Rotten Tomatoes. If a movie was rated at 85%, it's your own prerogative whether you want to go see an action film with an 85% rating or not. You have more data points to kind of make that decision based on. And you have to look at the explanation from your other fellow news consumers as to why they selected the specific flaw in the article or why they say they trust an article. As for how many users we would need on the platform to really make the impact that we need about just enough to scare journalists and news outlets into caring about their public ratings. So what we are hoping is that the wise journalists and the wise news outlets will try to adopt this new metric that we are measuring, which is essentially the public's trust in a particular article. And what's interesting is by reviewing an online article, you're actually reviewing upstream. So when you review an article, you're also creating a review for the journalist or the author of that article, because they're essentially just the average of all of their content that's out there. And you're also reviewing the publication that signed off on it. So author A created article B, and you reviewing article B also reviewed author A, and you therefore also reviewed the publication C that signed off on that author's publication.
I'd like to remind listeners, you're listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. In this segment of the program, we're speaking with Chase Palmieri. He is the co-founder of Tribeworthy, crowd-contested media. You can learn more at tribeworthy.com. We'll be back to continue our conversation after this brief musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff. On this segment of the program today, we're joined once again by Chase Palmieri. Chase is the CEO and co-founder of TribeWorthy.com, the home of crowd-contested media. Chase and his team are building trust among online news consumers by holding authors and news outlets accountable with a review system similar to Yelp and or Rotten Tomatoes. And full disclosure, I want to make sure listeners remember that Chase Palmieri and Tribeworthy are featured in the newest Project Censored book, Censored 2018. And I also have consulted with Tribeworthy in the past, particularly on critical media literacy education issues. That's one of the things that really stood out about the idea behind Tribeworthy was it wasn't just a thumbs up or a thumbs down. but it was actually going in and saying, well, why do you trust an article or why do you not trust an article? And then there's a series of templates you can go through and you can pick out various logical fallacies and these types of things. So Chase Palmieri, what if somebody goes to tribeworthy.com? What are they going to run into? And what are those clicks and those steps? And again, the reason I want you to walk through this is because it's really a fairly easy process.
Right. It's very easy. Just to take a quick step back, Tribeworthy is just simply a play on the word trustworthy, but as decided by our tribe of users. So again, it's tribeworthy, all one word, .com. And when you get to the website, you'll see a feed of articles that you can filter by topic or by rating, which is something that is unique only to us because we are essentially the only website online for news today that is capturing ratings associated with these articles. And so as you're browsing articles on our website, you can browse by headline and by rating. And what you'll see that's different on our site is the initial article that you're seeing in the feed, it doesn't list the author and news outlet because our goal is to actually open people up to content that they're not necessarily used to reading, but that is still accurate and credible and worth their time. And so you're always one click away from being able to see the source information, but the idea is that we are trying to open people up to a larger audience, these smaller independent outlets that are doing great work and deserve to be rewarded with more traffic. Because that's really what's killing a lot of these outlets today is they make their money, for better or worse, by monetizing users' eyeballs. And when users don't spend time to learn and trust these independent outlets, they end up just going to the mainstream outlets that they have known and don't necessarily trust, but they kind of already think that they understand the political leanings. It's harder to try to go read on a new outlet and try to uncover their political leanings on the spot. But that's all things that you can do with Tribeworthy. So if you're on the website, you would browse for articles, you might find a headline you're interested in, but it might have a poor rating. And then you could find an article on the same topic with a higher rating and spend your time reading that one. Again, we're not censoring articles because every article is there for you to see and read, but we are associating their ratings with them, holding them accountable and hopefully trying to redirect traffic to the best of the best. And once you read that article, you're sent away from our site. You're sent to the actual site because we want to reward the good journalism that these people are doing. So we have to send them the users so that they can monetize you in as the way that they see fit. But when you're done reading that article, unlike anywhere else, and especially now with comment sections shutting down on most news outlet websites just because of bad behavior and the fact that they don't have the time or want to take the time to read your comments anyway, we're pretty much the only place where you can come leave a thoughtful, critical review. And like you were saying about how you were consulting us back in the day, you're very instrumental in helping us put together a review process that had previously never existed. We essentially had to design a review process for critical media literacy, and we had to do it in as few steps as possible. We've managed to do it in 2 steps, which is really impressive because this is not supposed to feel like homework. This is supposed to feel just like a natural extension of your thought process as you're reading the article and as you complete an article. Because you already are leaving a review, in a sense, in your own head as to whether or not you trust an article or why not. But we're simply capturing it. Just like Yelp, before it existed, people were going to restaurants and leaving and telling each other through word of mouth or having either a good experience or a bad experience. Yelp began to capture that information and start to display it in a way that was more helpful. We're simply doing the same thing, but with readers' trust.
I'm noticing, too, by looking at the site, that your site is not cluttered by advertisements.
No, it's not. That is not the direction that we aim to monetize, but we will monetize in the future, but it's still a very long way away because we're early and a platform doesn't really monetize until you have a large enough user base. But I think everybody listening has a right to know how we monetize, or how we plan to monetize at least. And again, turning over to Yelp, because they've paved this pathway for us. Many people nowadays, when they search for a local business, they no longer search on Google. They actually go into Yelp and search for a local business through Yelp. And the reason being that you have all of this added value that you can see people's ratings and reviews inside of the search results. And so what has Yelp been able to do because of that? Well, now they have more search traffic and they've been able to promote certain restaurants in those top two positions. And they do it in a very transparent way by placing ad next to it. And obviously an Italian restaurant shows up when you're searching for Italian restaurants. So it's all still very relevant to the user, still very transparent. And we're essentially planning to do the same thing. There will come a time where hopefully most of the news-related search traffic will be coming through Tribeworthy, because right now when you go to Google and you search for a headline or an article, every single search result for 3,000 pages looks the exact same. There's no five-star ratings. There's nothing giving you a sense of whether you should click on one headline versus another. And so that's the added value that we're going to be able to offer, and we hope to steal away a significant portion of the news-related search from Google and to monetize that.
So how do you see Tribeworthy then working in concert with journalists or with journalistic institutions or publications?
Again, like Yelp, there will be claimable business profile pages. So a journalist will be able to come in here, claim their author rating page. They'll be able to fill out their profile, fill out additional information that will be helpful for the news consumers, but also for the news producer to kind of defend the rigor of their journalistic standards. And the same thing for news outlets. They'll come in and claim their pages. And the ones that pay attention to their ratings earliest will have the fewest blemishes on their ratings. And when the tip comes and people start to decide to read articles based on these ratings, which is, you know, a dream far out, but it is something that we think is the future of news, whether it's us or another organization, they're going to have to care about their trust rating in the public eye. They'll be rewarded with greater traffic and therefore greater revenue. And now it will no longer be based on who can write the most clickbaity headline and trick you into coming in. It'll be based on who is performing at the highest level of journalistic integrity and rigor, and traffic is coming in that way.
So, Chase Palmieri, it's not about clicks, likes, and shares.
No, it's about user trust, ultimately. These have all just been little shortcuts, temporary, short-term fixes that in turn broke other things. But ultimately, it's going to come down to where do readers want to spend their time, because where do they trust?
Again, Tribeworthy has been on the critical media literacy education circuit. They've done a number of public addresses. They've participated in conferences. They've been networking through a lot of educators, through the Global Critical Media Literacy Project, Project Censored, many other groups. Our good friend Abby Martin just gave you all a really nice endorsement. So you're actually attracting more and more attention from a lot of serious journalists, from people that are doing good work, that think that this will be, as you said, maybe not tomorrow, but in the future, this could be the gold standard of building trust among community for journalists.
Yeah, we think it is. And there's another reason for that. And it's that most of the solutions being proposed around online news today don't account for how trust is actually built in the digital world. They're trying to take something that is out here in the public space and bring it online, but they're not actually designing platforms for how trust is built online. And so when you look at platforms where trust is built, where somebody goes, looks at information, and then makes a decision with confidence based on it, you can look at platforms like Yelp, you can look at Goodreads, Rotten Tomatoes, any of these platforms, TripAdvisor, where you can clearly at a glance see the collective sentiment of consumers around a particular product or service. And that's never existed for news consumers. It's refreshing to see news consumers actually being given a voice.
Indeed it is. And that's naturally what attracted Andy Roth and I and Project Censored to what you were doing, and to try to support you, not just getting off the ground, but just letting people know that care about this stuff, that you're here. You're rising to that occasion, right? To help build trust. And it's in this so-called era of fake news, right? You're really trying to address this. And again, fact checkers can't scale. Blacklists are obviously a violation of freedom of expression and free press rights. Legislation is incredibly problematic. There's no way you can ban poor reporting or false reporting technically.
And we wouldn't want to.
No, but we could apply critical media literacy education skills, critical thinking, and you're providing a platform online for people to do that. You have an app. You now have a browser extension with Chrome.
We have an iPhone app and a Chrome extension, yeah.
Yeah, so you're making this even easier for people to get a hold of this. I also want to point out to listeners that you're all millennials. You're a millennial generation. generation, your young people that are doing this. I have to point that out because we often hear so much how the youth are not doing anything and they're apathetic and they're not voting or what have you. And what I've seen certainly in our work with social justice particularly is that young people are spearheading all of these movements of change, social change. And this is yet another one, right? Tribeworthy is another, I think, a very significant one because as Nicholas Johnson, the former FCC chairman, once said, whatever your first priority, if your second priority isn't reforming the media or building trust in the media, you're likely to get not very far in your first area of interest. And Tribeworthy to me seems like another way of helping build trust and really encouraging people to think independently on their own. So Chase Palmieri, some of our listeners may know that Facebook has recently created a system allegedly for rating news. And there's a couple of other organizations out there that are trying to address this issue after they got hit hard by the fake news claims after the last election. What's different about that versus Tribeworthy?
Facebook is actually downgrading the amount of news content in their newsfeed, down all the way to 4%. So that tells you the direction they're headed. And they say it's because they want to get back to being about the connection between friends and family. But the truth of it is they came dangerously close to becoming regulated. That's the thing that terrifies Facebook. That's what terrifies them more than anything. And so they're happy to remove themselves from the news space where all of the heat is and just play in all of the other social space and remain an unregulated entity. And that creates an opportunity for us, obviously. The thing about Facebook that's interesting is when you look at Facebook, a lot of people gather their news there. And you have to ask yourself why. And the reason is because people naturally want to gather news in a collaborative way. But Facebook is not designed for it. It became that because it was the most collaborative space. And so news entered the space. And then it thrived in that space. What we've done is we've designed a platform that is social at its core, but it's designed with a focus on news. It's not designed for anything low quality. It is purely based on news.
So this leads me to one more question, and I know that you hear this. You've certainly heard this before. How is Tribeworthy up to the challenge of bots and algorithms and trolls?
The truth is that we're not quite there yet, but luckily we have more pressing problems in front of us. We are not enough of a threat where people feel the need to come and mess with us, but we are preparing for that threat. One of the ways we're doing so is actually not only are our articles held accountable with a rating and authors and news outlets, but reviewers themselves on the platform actually have a user rating, a score as well. And that's based on how helpful the reviews are that they're leaving for other news consumers. So if a troll comes in and they leave a very hateful comment that is unhelpful, it's just unobjective, and it's not doing anything to protect the next news consumer, and it's mostly just trying to talk about the content and less about the actual quality of the reporting, well, those reviews are downvoted, and therefore that user's score is downvoted, and that is all laid out very transparently so that you can see at a glance, again, designing for at-a-glance behavior, you can see at a glance whether or not you should even trust that reviewer's review.
We're speaking with Chase Palmieri, co-founder of Tribeworthy.com, crowd-contested media. If you go to their webpage and click on About, you can see online news is no longer a spectator sport. Tribeworthy is a fun community-based news gathering and review platform. Join forces with other news consumers to find trustworthy online articles. Stay informed with minimal time and effort and improve everyone's daily news gathering. Well, that certainly sounds like a great idea, and you've put it together here, Chase Palmieri. Anything you'd like to add here?
Like I said at the very beginning, we just launched our Chrome browser extension. The reason we did so is that people liked the Tribeworthy website. They found it useful, but it was not matching their natural news gathering. We weren't actually solving the problem for them out in the real world where they're coming face to face with these articles, clicking through Facebook and landing on an article. People didn't want to have to grab the URL of an article, come over to Tribeworthy, post it on a Tribeworthy, review it there, and go through this whole process. They wanted to, when they land on an online article, they wanted to know what the rating is, what other news consumers were saying about that article right then and there. And when they're done reading the article, they wanted to review it right right then and there. And that's what the Chrome browser extension does.
We've been speaking with Chase Palmieri from tribeworthy.com. And if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, I know the show airs all around the country, but March 5th to 9th will be at Sonoma State University Social Justice Week. Project Censored is one of the co-sponsors of that event. Ralph Nader speaking. I'll be speaking on fake news. Glenn Ford will be there. So many other people will be there. And also Tribeworthy will be there. Chase and Jared and some of the Tribeworthy team will be there throughout the week. So if you're around and you can get out to Sonoma State University, come check it out. And please check out the website at tribeworthy.com. If you are an educator, there is an educator page, and it links to the Global Critical Media Literacy Project Educators Resource Guide, which we put together a couple of years ago. But it also has the contacts for Chase and for Jared and a few of the other folks you work with. So you can educators can email you directly about how they can get involved, how they can get students signed up to participate. I know I do this in class. Nolan Higdon, a lot of the faculty we work with, they actually have students go and use the Tribeworthy site as part of assignments, extra credit, other things.
Right.
And it also helps you build the platform.
Not only that, but we love coming to classrooms to speak to students and professors, especially if they're a journalism or media studies or poli-sci course, because the students' eyes light up, because to them, this makes sense. It doesn't feel new or strange or threatening to them. The current solutions being proposed are the ones that are threatening them and scaring them. Being able to see what your fellow news consumers think, that should just exist.
Well, and thanks to you and the folks at Tribeworthy, it does. And so we invite everybody to go see tribeworthy.com. Chase Palmieri, thanks so much for joining us on the Project Censored show. I'm sure we'll have you up for updates in the future.
Looking forward to it.
Up next on the Project Censored show, we are joined by the independent journalist, Dave Lindorf. We'll be talking about a recent article he wrote at thiscan'tbehappening.net. Washington is engaged in information warfare, including fake news and trolling, for years. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On this segment of the program, we are joined by veteran investigative journalist Dave Lindorf. Lindorf is the founder of thiscan'tbehappening.net. He is the author of four books. He's been a freelance writer for nearly 40 years. He writes for The Nation, Salon, London Review of Books, High Times, and other publications. Dave Lindorf has also graced the pages of our annual Project Censored volumes many, many times. And he also has been a guest right here at the Project Censored show. Dave Lindorf, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
You have a really great recent piece at your site, thiscan'tbehappening.net. And again, I love the tagline at your site, "This can't be happening, a major destabilizing influence."
We try.
Indeed, and you are doing a great job. Your recent article, late February, is Washington has engaged in information warfare, including fake news and trolling, for years. Now, why would we be writing about that? Why would we be talking about this issue right now, Dave Lindorf, in the midst of Russiagate?
There's this whole thing going on trying to blame the Democrats' colossal loss to Trump and the Republicans in November 2016 on the Russians rather than on themselves and their catastrophic, candidate and their years of betraying their voters, catching up with them. But there's almost nothing there. The things I've read and the things that are in the Mueller indictment that try to show this kind of trolling, most of them are things that the rest of the U.S. media does, you know, buying ads to promote their news stories that are coming up. That's how you use social media, like RT TV, which I frequently am on. And, you know, full disclosure, I get paid $100 for my time when I go down to the video uplink studio to answer a question for them. I need to be paid for my time if I have to drive down there and, you know, talk for 5 minutes. By the time I do it, I've spent 2 hours. So they've agreed to send me $100. I say that as fair disclosure. And their news, frankly, I mean, people who complain about it should go to RT.com and look at the America one and just see what they think. It's like good American journalists working on it. And it's better news. They're the ones who were reporting on, say, Standing Rock before anybody in the mainstream media in the U.S. was covering it. It was just being, the violence was being ignored, but there it was in RT TV. You need that stuff. But the point is, why is this coming up? That everybody's in high dudgeon over the fact that Russia may have, and I have to say that because there's really, the evidence is very, very, very pathetic, that they've been trying to stir up trouble here through fake news or pushing things that are already tense between right and left in the U.S. and trying to get people angrier. It wouldn't surprise me if they were trying to do that, because that's what countries do to each other. But the real point is that Washington has been doing it big time, including to Russia, when they really interfered and maybe helped turn the election to Yeltsin for his reelection.
Going back to the 90s?
1996. And Wolsey, the CIA director, admitted that the U.S., since World War II, has interfered in at least 81 democratic elections around the world, trying to throw them one way. And he excused it by saying, well, you know, we were on the good side trying to prevent communists from taking over. You know, they interfered in the Italian elections, French elections after the war, Greek election, and they interfered in the Russian election, like I said. It's okay for us to do it. I mean, it's laughable for us to be saying the Russians interfered with our election when, if anything, if they did do it, it would be payback for what we did in 1996.
Right. During all of this sort of Russia hysteria at MSNBC with Rachel Maddow and, of course, many others, as you know, we have to remember that the initial claims were that Russia hacked the election, then they meddled in the election, now they're colluding. The baselines keep shifting. The goalposts keep moving.
That's because the evidence doesn't show up.
And furthermore, isn't it Les Moonves over at CBS that said that Trump was bad for America but damn good for CBS? And then the networks collectively gave somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 to $6 billion of coverage for this guy?
Yeah, free coverage.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
For ratings, yeah.
So these claims of fake news and so on are also interesting because a lot of the claims aren't necessarily fake. They just go against establishment narratives.
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing is, of course, well, if you know, we talked about this before about how alternative news is being called fake news and corporate news is being called real news. The other reason I wrote this article is that one of the complaints is that they have these trolls and these boiler rooms of trolls in St. Petersburg who are stirring up on Facebook and getting in debates and carrying people down with fake facts and stuff like that. And the reality is that we've got that too. The Pentagon has for years been paying people to be basically sock puppets with fake identities going on to sites. I remember Common Dreams, somebody at Common Dreams told me some years back during the Iraq War that they had found that they were being heavily hit with trolls on their comments pages, and they did an investigation. They hired someone to look at what was happening, and they found that a lot of the letter writers, unidentified letter writers, had ISPs of the Pentagon. When they told me that, they said, don't write about it because we're going to write an article about it, but I never saw it appear. But that's what I was told. I found myself bombarded after I did a piece for In These Times, and I write about it in this piece, and it ruined my relationship with In These Times. ITT handled it so badly. What happened was I wrote about depleted uranium weapons being used in Iraq, which they were used extensively. So I wrote about this, and I used some numbers about how much was used, which I'd gotten from European sources and also from an expert who was involved with it, Doug Rocky, a former Army captain who had conducted a Pentagon study on the safety of DU weapons, which he concluded they weren't safe, and then went on to direct the decontamination of sites in Kuwait after the Gulf War. He was one of my sources for how much they've used, and I was bitterly attacked by several people. One who I think attacked you guys, this guy Jack Cohen Jope.
We got a lot of heat for that because in the mid-90s, Project Censored covered several of these kinds of stories, and one of them put the figure that since the Manhattan Project of World War II, numerous government studies have indicated DU weapons were effective, they were also toxic, et cetera, but one put in terms of the first Gulf War that the Army fired at least 14,000 rounds or 40 tons of DU ammunition. In other words, there are people saying that this wasn't happening at all and you were being attacked, we're being attacked for that, but nevertheless, and that's something you're pointing out in your recent article, is that you're saying that you link, in fact, to seven different articles of stories, whether it's about DU or the Pentagon doing fake Al-Qaeda videos, etc. I mean, you're talking about how they're actively involved in manipulating information. In this case, you're talking about how you're actually reporting information for alternative press, right, that then in turn comes around and is accused of being fake news because it counters official narratives.
Yeah, but it's attacked by government-paid trolls from the U.S., not Russia, attacking legitimate news stories and trying to undermine them by lying. What they did is they went after Rocky and tried to claim that he was like a fraud, and they tried to say that my facts were wrong. And the result was that Joel Bleifuss, the editor at In These Times, even though I'd been a reporter for them since they were founded and I was on their masthead, he published a letter from this guy, Jope, tearing apart what I'd said, and he didn't give me a chance to respond. He just ran it. I found it one day when the paper came to my house, and they never do that in these times. They always give their writers a chance to reply to critical articles. So I complained bitterly, and he finally agreed to let me write a response, and then the schmuck wrote his own italicized editor's comment saying that he still didn't believe my article. And I just said, screw this, I'm off the masthead, guys. And I wrote a RIT article about In These Times that ran in Counterpunch. I said they'd lost their way and it's a dead magazine. It's laughable, but it's also tragic that the U.S. is using these sock puppets, paid sock puppets, to attack legitimate news in U.S. publications. It's horrible.
Well, Dave Lindorf, I mean, I'm even just looking right now on foreignpolicy.com. They have an article from a year ago talking about the U.S. using depleted uranium in Syria. The reason I bring that up is that the original critiques, I recall, with Project Censored, was that this was never happening at all.
Yeah, it was total fake news being propagated by people who, you know, I wonder about Jope because he bills himself as an anti-nuke person. He has this little website and he goes against nuclear weapons and nuclear power. But, you know, why his Ahab-like obsession with attacking depleted uranium weapons stories? It doesn't make any sense. So I'm assuming he's involved with this paid troll thing. More recently, there's this guy, Joel Harding, who was a high-ranking Army guy with the Cyber Command who turns out to have been the one who reviewed an article I'd written in Counterpunch and called it appallingly pro-Russian propaganda and used that to argue that Counterpunch should be on proper not. And, you know, I traced him down and I even talked with him and I found out he worked at the Cyberspace Command in Fort Detrick outside of Washington, D.C., and that's what they do, this kind of crap. And he's affiliated with this group of hackers and fake newsmakers in Ukraine that have been doing a lot of this stuff.
Nafis Ahmed wrote several years ago, going back 3 years, an article, Pentagon makes no secret of wanting to monitor social change activism, the Minerva Research Initiative. This goes back to 2008 under Robert Gates. And this has been going on for quite a while. And in fact, just a few years ago, the Pentagon invested $8 million in projects from almost any academic discipline, which must, of course, be relevant to contemporary DOD strategic priorities. So the purpose is that they are looking, they're investing money to find people to basically bring on so that they can both monitor real time, counterattack, write their own propaganda, or as you said, troll, right? Go on your site and try to defame you and then flack from the propaganda model, contact people at the magazine and give them all kinds of grief because you're writing about these things. Instead of having you as the journalist, be able to respond and an ombudsperson step in. So what happens is the pressure causes them to cave in, and then they kind of throw you under the bus.
Yeah, that's the result. It used to be done in the McCarthy and post-McCarthy era. It was more direct, like a friend of mine who was writing for the Riverside paper in California, and he had just gotten a job like a month before, and he was getting back on his feet, and he had been a former member of the Communist Party until 65. So he's working, and the FBI came while he was at work and went to his editor and said, you know, this guy's a communist, you should fire him. And they did. His editor told him, I'm sorry, we can't have you here if you're a communist. And he said, I'm not. And he said, well, yeah, but you were. So he got dumped. And that was the old way it went. You couldn't be a Red or a fellow traveler. But now it's, they'll attack your credibility, they'll undermine you. And these days, you know, it's so the jobs are so hard to keep that it just keeps everybody in line. And you wonder, why is the reporting so shabby, and why aren't reporters speaking up and stuff? And people are just careerists, and they're afraid, and they get intimidated, or they think this will happen. There's not a lot of spine on the editor side, and the young journalists are caving.
We're speaking with independent journalist Dave Lindorf. His site is thiscan'tbehappening.net. We're talking about a recent article that Lindorf wrote. Washington has long engaged in information warfare, including fake news and trolling. I'm Mickey Huff. This is the Project Censored Show. After this musical break, we'll continue our conversation with independent journalist Dave Lindorf. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. In this segment of the program today, we are speaking with a veteran investigative journalist and founder of ThisCan'tBeHappening.net, Dave Lindorf. He's the author of four books, has been a freelance writer for the past 38 years. He's written for The Nation, Salon, London Review of Books, High Times, and many, many more, and also has had many of his stories highlighted in Project Censored's annual books, published by Seven Stories Press. Dave Lindorf, before the break, we were talking about the influence that government can have on journalistic outlets to spike stories, to attack journalists. And now, in the age of weaponized fake news, it's been made even easier. We see a president now that wields the moniker of fake news at many of the corporate media outlets that seem to get caught up in his web and his narrative rather than actually critique his policies and off the corruption that is boiling beneath the surface. And just before we took that break, we were talking about the chilling effect that this has on journalists, people not wanting to be targeted. So clearly at your site, ThisCan'tBeHappening.net, you didn't get the chill and you didn't get the memo that there are things that you're not supposed to write about. So the folks that are in your collective continue to write about very serious and significant issues as a matter of course. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, we're kind of the opposite. We found out from the Partnership for Civil Justice, who did this huge Freedom of Information data grab from the FBI and Homeland Security when they were looking into what actually went on in the crushing of the Occupy movement. And they sent a memo that they found among the files that they got, which was sent out. I think we talked about this once. It warned 72 fusion centers about a little newspaper called This Can't Be Happening that had run an article exposing Homeland Security's role in coordinating the attacks on all the Occupy movement sites. And they had this beautiful line that said, fortunately, this information is still compartmentalized in the alternative media, but we're alerting you in case it breaks into the mainstream media. And this came from something called the Office of Threat Assessment in Washington. So we put that on our masthead. That's another thing it says on the masthead. the only news organization, U.S. news organization, to be officially labeled a threat by Homeland Security.
So, Dave Lindorf, you have argued in your recent piece that this is not just a one-off. This isn't just a happenstance thing. This is a calculated, targeted effort. We know that the CIA has long meddled and tried to work with newsrooms. And in fact, John Kuryakow, who is the former CIA counterterrorism officer that blew the whistle on the CIA torture program that then served 23 months in prison as a result to oppose the program and make the public aware of it. The people doing the torture served no time. He served 23 months of a prison sentence because of it. He has a recent piece titled, "Why Does the CIA Prefer Corporate Media?" And he kind of goes through and he's talking about a very similar business, right? This is kind of like real fake news, right? CIA backed, Pentagon backed. And you, of course, highlight that in your recent article, and you give a list of different circumstances where the so-called deep state or Pentagon officials or others not only meddle in news relations, but actually manufacture stories. One of them is in our recent book. It's the Pentagon paid UK PR firm for fake Al-Qaeda videos. That's a pretty incredible story.
I remember that. There were these movies coming out and people were saying, oh my God, look at these horrible things. And it turns out that we were making them.
That was the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. That was from October of 2016. Fake News and False Flags, right? That was the title of the article.
Wasn't one of those actually cited as having instigated the attack on the embassy in Libya?
Yeah, I believe so.
One of their movies got everybody so ticked off that they attacked the embassy.
So interesting blowback from fake news, like real fake news blowback. And again, this article points out that the Pentagon paid a British PR firm more than $660 million.
That's a lot.
To run it. I mean, geez, just think what you could do with this. This can't be happening with a fraction of that money.
Oh, my God.
If they really think you're a propaganda program, they should pony up.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Well, they were running a top secret propaganda program in Iraq from 2006 to 2011. The reason I'm pointing that out is this is like the DU story, like some of the other stories that you're bringing up. This is not something that happened yesterday. This is not happening since the popularization and weaponization of the term fake news. This is stuff that has been happening ritually as a matter of historic pattern for decades.
That's right. Look what they did to Webb.
Gary Webb from
the Dark Alliance thing. They ruined his life and drove him to suicide for telling the truth.
And of course, they denied it. The CIA denied it. The San Jose Mercury News took Gary Webb's story and published it, and then apparently were contacted and or influenced to stop supporting him, sack him from the paper, and the CIA initially denied it, but no one could really find any serious errors in Gary Webb's reporting. And then I know that he, through Project Censored, was introduced to seven stories, and eventually the Dark Alliance book was published on the CIA crack cocaine connection, wherein the CIA eventually claimed that, yes, they were doing it, but it wasn't really that big of a deal.
Yeah, except that they killed him.
They ruined his career, and then they also sparked some of the crack cocaine epidemic that was going on in South Central Los Angeles.
Right.
So it was far more than no big deal in that case. So, Dave Lindorf, there's a few other things. And again, I'm reminding listeners to go to thiscan'tbehappening.net, and you can learn a lot more about what's happening with Dave Lindorf, and in particular this article. Dave Lindorf, let's go back to where we started with all of the things happening with the so-called Russiagate. We already mentioned the billions of dollars of free coverage Trump got, the $3 billion given to Clinton, a little less maybe to Bernie Sanders. Somehow, this kind of information, it just doesn't even come into context. Right here in the U.S., it's a multi-billion dollar business to try to sway people with propaganda.
Sure. There was a hit piece done by, I think it was 60 Minutes on RT, where even though they were doing a hit piece, the woman that was the head of it was quite articulate and managed to embarrass them pretty much. But looking at the story, you just say, this is an awful story. It doesn't make sense. But one of the points is that every network uses social media to promote their news stories and their programs. And that's what RT was doing.
This is what I'm trying to point out, is that there seems to be highly selective outrage.
Absolutely. And then on top of that, there's a lot of fake news that's deliberately promoted in the corporate media that they know that it's fake. They'll quote only official government sources to say that the Syrian government used gas attack in Ghouta. Great. Everybody knows that the White Helmets are a propaganda outfit. Nobody says that in the U.S. media when they report on these guys. It's like those are like the Red Cross, right? But they're not.
Dave Lindorf, in your recent article, you say we live in complicated times. It's not good enough any longer to just watch or read the news put out by once respected news sources. We know that they've become incredibly corrupted, you write, by their near monopoly status in most markets, their vulnerability to government pressure, and by reporters' loss of professionalism in the face of increasing job insecurity. So there's a lot going on here. What, in your assessment, is one of the most important things that we really can do?
I'll give you an example really quickly. I have a friend who's very active in the local Democratic Party, lifelong Democrat, really dedicated guy. We were talking and he was saying, isn't it true that Russia invaded Crimea? And I said, no, it's not. They didn't invade Crimea. They had 20,000 troops there by agreement with Ukraine. And they never brought troops in. They were just there. And he said, didn't Assad gas all these people? And what are we going to do about that? And I said, but he didn't. It's pretty clear that it's by ISIS that caused an incident and get the U.S. to come in. And he said, but I read this in every paper. They're all saying that. And I said, look, you have to look for other sources of information because these organizations are basically doing government propaganda. And he said, well, where can I look? And I said, well, you go online. You can read The Guardian in England, much better newspaper than The New York Times or The Washington Post. They have their own problems, but it gives you another perspective. And then there's really good alternative news sources in the U.S., Truthout, Common Dreams. This can't be happening. Most liberals go and look at HuffPost, which is not really that alternative. But there are much better places. Truthdig, for God's sake. That's great. And Consortium News. And there's one other thing that they need to do. You got to support alternative media because this stuff doesn't happen for free. People need to go to places that are doing this good, important work of getting real news out and give it something. Give it $5.
I hear what you're saying, Dave Lindorf. You have done almost four decades of stellar work of investigative journalism, and your site is thiscan'tbehappening.net. Certainly encourage listeners to go there and read some of the great journalism that comes out of your site with your collective. And thank you once again for coming back on the Project Censored Show.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign.
That does it for another episode of the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Thank you for tuning in to the Project Censored Show, which airs on nearly 40 stations around the United States from Maui to New York. All of our programs are archived online at projectcensored.org. We'll see you next time. Without oppressive force, enslaving for almighty dollar bills. We won. We got the love of the brothers and our sisters. We won. The people together can overthrow the system. We won. We got that love of the brothers and your sisters. We won. The people together can overthrow the system. We won. We got the love of the brothers and our sisters. We won. The people together can overthrow the system. We won. We got the love of the brothers and our sisters. We won. The people organized can build the kind of crimes perpetrated by criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguised under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide wars fought for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons build the capacity, citizens. And the times for the master thief, combine and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame. At the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love with our brothers and our sisters.